Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Teron Davenport will join us to kick off the second hour of the program with the draft just around the corner. We'll talk with TD in the next hour. Also, this is what I know. We'll head east at noon. Also, throw in a little wrinkle with our Vols coverage today in the third hour of the program. Adam Vingan from The Athletic is on the line with us. Adam, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Where do you think this is going? As all the leagues are trying to figure out how to get back on their playing surface, where do you think this is going on the hockey side?
It's really hard to say. And Matt Duchene did a conference call with local reporters last week, and I thought he was pretty upfront about where this is going, at least as much as he could be. We're all speculating at this point. But he said that he can't envision a scenario where if the league comes back, fans will be allowed in the building. I think if there is hockey this season, we have seen the last of hockey with spectators in the building. And I know that you've had Elliot Freeman on multiple times, as you do every week, and you know he has mentioned and reported recently the idea of neutral sites, perhaps. He mentioned North Dakota. There's been a report about Manchester, New Hampshire. You know, low densely populated areas where this could happen. But it just seems incredibly early to speculate. I think we've talked about this before, but I have a hard time imagining this season going deep into the summer if the NHL's intention, first and foremost, is to make sure that next season isn't disrupted because of what happened with the coronavirus pandemic. So I wonder internally if the NHL has a drop-dead date, so to speak, where Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, whomever makes the decision, says, if we don't feel we can get this league back up by X date, then we're just going to call it. And I wonder if that date, you know, is sooner rather than later. I mean, so I remember having a conversation with Robbie Stanley where I thought Memorial Day might be a good barometer. If businesses are still closed, if we're still social distancing, if the curve hasn't been flattened by Memorial Day, which is the last weekend in May, so about 6 weeks from now, I'm not sure what the league is going to do. But I'm trying to stay as cautiously optimistic as I can, but I'm taking more of the glass half-empty scenario. I have a very hard time imagining we're going to see competitive sports again this season.
Okay. You put something up on The Athletic early this morning.
I did.
Preddies, a salute to the best and worst of the Predator season. Before I go any further, what was the premise of this? Tell everybody who's listening about the article and a little backdrop on it, and then we'll go from there.
Well, as most of you listening, I'm bored out of my mind right now, so I needed to find a way to entertain myself as I'm quarantined. So I decided to create a Predators award show, sort of. I called it the Preddies because I couldn't think of anything else. It's not the most creative title, but it works for the purpose of the article. And basically, I just handed out end-of-season awards to players and games. So it's not just players. I also picked the best game, the worst game, the best goal, you know, things of that nature, best takedown, best bromance, which I have titled the PK and Tony Best Bromance Award after PK Subban and Anthony Boteto. So I just decided to have a little fun with it and just give some fictitious awards to the Predators if the season does not resume.
Okay, so this was you. This is not you doing votes or anything with your
no,
readers.
This
is just you. Okay.
That's me.
Let me just start with the worst game. You have the Winter Classic deemed as the worst game. Before I ask you why, I guess when you think about the month of November and, you know, I guess, let's see, the game in Colorado, the game at home here against Chicago, the power play goals against Vancouver and the nightmare was that. How did you come up with the Winter Classic being the worst game in your mind?
And there were, and those games you mentioned, Darren, were games I considered, especially that game in Colorado where they lost 9-4. And I also thought about the game at home against Vancouver, in which they allowed five power play goals. But I landed on the Winter Classic just because of the scale of the game itself. You know, it was the league's marquee outdoor event. 20,000 Predators fans came to Dallas and had a great showing at Cotton Bowl Stadium. We heard it. We saw it. We were all there. And the Predators, as I wrote in the story, pretty much embarrassed themselves in the second and third periods of that game. I also just look back at, also I included the fact that Ryan Ellis was concussed in that game and missed 20 games, which was a huge loss as well. And I just go back to being in that dressing room after the game. And I thought about, and I included the quote from Pecorine. It was a longer quote, but I included the juiciest part when he said, quote unquote, "We're in trouble right now." I just thought that we had seen the Predators struggle in that, like those of us around the team every day, like the four of us, we had seen the Predators struggle all season long, but this game, the Winter Classic, their deficiencies were exposed to an international viewing audience. And there was no way that those issues could be ignored any longer. And then 5 days later, Peter Laviolette was fired. So I just think when you look at the scale of the game, how important it was for the franchise and an opportunity to be the only game on New Year's Day at Cotton Bowl Stadium, the first Southern-based Winter Classic, there was a lot of hoopla, a lot of excitement around that game, and the Predators laid an egg. So while the other games certainly were bad and worse on the scoreboard, I think when you consider everything that went into the Winter Classic, that was the worst game, in my opinion.
Talking to Adam Bingen from The Athletic. And Adam, it is interesting to, as we're in this pause, there's been a lot of reflection on a lot of different things. But, those are the thoughts that run through my mind. As you mentioned, there were several really frustrating individual games during whatever it was that they played, 70 games. And at the same time, we're having all these replays on our station, plus on Fox Sports Tennessee. And, of course, you see what the team looks like in their best moments. Ironically, they are, not coincidentally, they're undefeated in these replay games. But it does show you the ebb and flow of a season, when you skip around the different chapters. But I thought it was an interesting piece that you put together. One of the things that jumped out to me, and I had noticed it too, was just how great UC Saros was after John Hines took control, or has been since John Hines took control. That's really been the stabilizing force of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the Predators' improved record, you can pretty much point to goaltending as the main reason why. And as you mentioned, Willie, as it says in the story, since John Hines was hired as coach on January 7th up until the time of the pause, which was March 12th, UC Saros had a 12-5-0 record, a .213 goals against average, and a .935 save percentage in 19 appearances. And then, according to my friends at SportLogic, UC's 17.6 goals saved above 17.6 goals saved above expectation in all situations in that 2 month span were second only to Vezina Trophy favorite Connor Hellebuyck of the Winnipeg Jets. So, both goaltenders deserve credit for that, but UC Saros in particular. I thought the most intriguing storyline down the stretch, and it was the story I wrote after the game in Montreal, which ended up being the Predators' last game of this season, potentially. The headline was, UC Saros is the new normal. I thought the most intriguing storyline down the stretch for the Predators before the season paused was what the workload was going to look like for the goaltenders, and the distinct possibility that if the Predators made the playoffs, UC Saros would start game one against whomever the Predators were going to play. And we had been talking about possibly the transition of from Pecorine to UC Saros coming to fruition this season. I think if UC Saros would have started game one of the postseason, that would have solidified it. So the fact that we were perhaps robbed of that opportunity certainly was a storyline that I was really looking forward to.
Yeah, we do wonder what the roles of UC Saros and Pecorine will be when everything resumes. I think where it's going to start. At least where it should start, even though everybody is going to be starting from square one, which brings me to my next question, Adam, for you. Pierre LeBrun had a good detailed article in The Athletic, and he talked about something that I think is worth kicking around if you're a player for sure, and that is when you resume the season. I mean, we know it's not going to be anytime soon. It may be another couple more months after we've already been paused for a month. So let's say you're off for 3 months, optimistically, maybe even longer, and they're going to play. Wouldn't it make sense to play a couple exhibition games before you actually play this high-stakes hockey that eventually you're going to get to pretty quick?
I think that's certainly a good idea, and we've heard players on these conference calls at the NHL facilitated over the past couple weeks say similar things. Matt Duchene last week said he feels that each team needs at least 3 weeks from the time that team facilities open to the time that they're playing games. And whether that means exhibition/preseason-like games or starting the playoffs, you know, that's at least, they think they need at least a three-week time frame from when they're allowed to go back to the rink in order to be prepared. You know, the one thing that I've always thought about with the playoffs, with the resumption of the NHL season, my idea has always been that the fewer teams you have involved coming back, the better. For example, there's absolutely no reason for the Detroit Red Wings to come back. They're awful. You know, why are these players going to want to, you know, be sitting down, you know, for 3 or 4 months, not training, then have to ramp it up to play 2 or 3 meaningless games for them, at least? You know, I think that the fewer teams they bring back, the better, which is why I think they should start right from the postseason, go right into the playoffs. And maybe they play exhibition games among the teams that are going to make the playoffs. Maybe they can do some cross-conference games. So they're not playing teams they could potentially play in the first few rounds of the playoffs. But I think the fewer teams that come back, the better. So let's just say they expand the playoff format from 16 teams to 20 teams. The other 11 teams that don't make the playoffs, they don't come back. Their offseason starts. They just continue doing what they were doing. Maybe they can start their offseason training, but they're not coming back. They're not getting ramped up to play games. So I think that I've always been of the mind that the fewer teams that return to the NHL, if this season returns, the better in terms of the logistics of how it would work.
And one thing we know, there's plenty of time to kick around different ideas and brainstorm about logistics on how to do this. I know I've done it sitting at my office in front of a computer, thinking about what the best way is. So I can imagine what it's like as everybody throws their ideas in there to the league office. One more question for me, Adam, before I turn it over to Chase, and that is, have you seen any uptick in Darren's meme game since you put him on the list the last time you were on the show? I feel like you really challenged him. I feel like Darren has responded to the challenge.
Well, my challenge was for him to stop doing them completely, not to make them better.
But you knew that was not in the cards. You knew that was not going to happen.
Yes, I knew that was not going to happen, but I do enjoy the brain teasers. At least if Darren is going to tweet things that, you know, that cater to my intelligence, not dumb it down.
Darren,
I appreciate the brain teasers.
Well, he is not, I'm glad that he appreciates them, but we as a show would appreciate it if he would get involved. He has not yet answered one of them. I mean, your colleague Glennon nailed one last week.
One.
The toughest one last week he nailed on the first guess, and honestly, he was one of the few people. There were hundreds and hundreds of entries, and he was one of the few that nailed it on the first try.
All right, I will get involved this week, I promise.
Okay, we got a new one. We got a fresh one out there right now.
One was just hit. Yeah. Send was just hit as you were talking about it.
I love the prize.
I'm glad you were paying attention
this.
This is a great prize.
I'm really glad about that.
This is a prize that I don't think Adam really has a feel for, because I think he got here a little too late. But
yeah,
I mean, this is a tremendous place to have a meal.
I used to go there all the time.
Oh man, oh man, was that place good?
So if anybody who's you're saying that the winner gets dinner for two at a restaurant that no longer exists.
He's a smart guy, that Adam.
Adam,
he's
I didn't
very
say
smart
that
man.
At all. Okay, you said that. I didn't say that.
Adam,
where's the incentive in that?
It's all.
Hey, Adam, trust us. Trust the show. It's a great place. You'll get a.
I
it's a great
I'll
place.
I never get to eat it because it's closed.
Let me in. Adam, so here's my thing with everything that we've been discussing. Whenever the Predators have some sort of pause, whether it's the All-Star break or the week off or, you know, combination of the two or just, you know, a long period of time in between games, I tend to get worried with this team because historically with this group, we've just they're slow out of the gate. They can't respond. So I know every team is faced with this. Nobody has an advantage, but is that any type of concern that whenever they get back to playing, whether it's, you know, resuming the regular season or going straight into the playoffs, whatever the case may be, do you have that kind of concern with this team?
That's a good question. I guess I really haven't thought about it too much just because, as you said, Chase, every team is going to be in the same position. You know, they're all going to be potentially coming back after a multi-month layoff. But you're right. You know, I think of the way that they were playing leading into the Christmas break when they went on that four-game road trip, went 3-0-1, you know, won that exciting overtime game in Boston, you know, dominated the New York Islanders at Nassau Coliseum, and then they come back from the Christmas break and lay two eggs against the Pittsburgh Penguins in back-to-back games before losing in the Winter Classic. I mean, that is certainly something the Predators have shown in the past not to be great. You know, they're not great at coming off of an extended layoff, but I just wonder, because every team is going to be in the same position, that perhaps that will be mitigated. But certainly something to think about if we get to that point, which I hope is soon, because as you can see from my story, I'm running out of creative juices here. Fast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, look, we all know how that goes. And along those lines, you know, I think goaltending, you know, is something that, you know, that you had in your article with Juuse Saros and his breakout year. Pekka-Rinne, it's been more up and down. Do you think that the break helps or benefits those two?
That's a good question. I wonder if it helps one and hurts the other. I mean, I bet it would be great for Pekka-Rinne in terms of being able to clear his head and come back to the team and with a fresh state of mind after a struggle in the second half of the season. And I wonder if the momentum that Juuse Saros was gaining through most of the second half of the season will have been halted by the break. But we were talking about this a little bit before, but I think that, you know, I there are some things you're going to have to start from scratch about, but if the team does come back, I go right back to Juuse Saros. I mean, he was proving before the break and starting 15 of the 21 games before the pause that he was among the best goaltenders in the league and really helping the Predators get into a playoff spot. So even though we might be 3 or 4 months removed from that by the time the season starts up again, if it does start up again, I would go right back to Juuse Saros.
Adam, before we let you go, I you know, have to ask you a wrestling question because I know you probably tuned in to WrestleMania weekend. WWE is going to resume their live shows from the Performance Center even after there was a reported case of COVID-19 of somebody testing positive for it. What have been your thoughts on how WWE has handled all of this?
Well, certainly I think, you know, they're doing those of us who are wrestling fans a service by giving us fresh content when the rest of the sports world has been shuttered. But certainly you have to wonder how long they were going to be able to do that before, as you said, reportedly someone tested positive for coronavirus. You know, I think they've done a good job on the fly of making it a made-for-TV event in terms of how they're able to shoot it without having a crowd. I wonder if some of the other sports will take cues from them if they come back. Let's say the Stanley Cup playoffs are conducted without fans. Perhaps they'll learn from what WWE and AEW have done in terms of how to set the cameras, how to, you know, what angles to shoot from, all of those things. So, you know, I've been happy that they've been providing me with new content every week as they normally do. But, you know, they're out there on an island. I mean, they're the only sports entertainment product that's occurring right now. So eventually I'm sure they might succumb to some pressure, but we'll see.
All right. Get that brain working. We'll see what you got. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. I will do that.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work, and we do appreciate him joining us. We will come back with more of Darren Donick and Chase next.
Hey. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.